Hello, I'm Susan Spence. Welcome to the latest Borders podcast, where every fortnight you can listen to interviews and news from the world of books, music and DVD, as well as hear about exclusive offers and competitions. As always, we've put together some great features for you. In this edition, we have an interview with Don Felder, the former guitarist with the Eagles. And we talk to the comedian Harry Hill in a quite hilarious interview as he tells us about his new joke book and the latest installment in the adventures of Tim the Tiny Horse. And store-wise, we also caught up with Jay Green and John Packard, who tell us about the hottest new toys, games and children's books this Christmas at Borders. So there's plenty going on in this edition of the podcast, but I also want to tell you about two fantastic events at Borders this Christmas. First is the launch of Borders Mobile. Simply text the word BORDERS to 82100 to get a free voucher for £5 off when you spend £30 either in-store or online. So that's text the word BORDERS to 82100 and you'll get yourself a free voucher for £5 off when you spend £30 either in-store or online. Also, don't forget to buy the Daily Telegraph on Saturday, 1st November, to get a voucher for a free Where's Wally book, redeemable in any Borders store. This offer is to coincide with the amazing competition Ultimate Where's Wally on Google Earth. Simply log on to borders.co.uk/Where's Wally or buy the Telegraph on Monday, 3rd November to take part. Find Wally on Google Earth every day for 7 days and enter a draw to win a holiday to one of the fantastic destinations he's hiding in. Now, we all know the Eagles. They pretty much wrote the soundtrack to the 70s and 80s, and even now, their albums top the charts. Don Felder joined the band in 1974, and his life changed forever. He's written a book about that time called Heaven and Hell, My Life with the Eagles. It's the first ever behind-the-scenes look at the drugs, orgies and acrimony that dogged the band. And Dan took time out to chat to Alan Dodgett.
Hello, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Welcome to Borders.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're on a whirlwind tour, I gather, at the moment.
Yeah, I actually came over to do some charity work and raise some money for a hospital in Manchester called Christie's Children's Charity Hospital. And wound up coming into London for a couple of days to do some promotion for this book.
Oh, fantastic. You are traveling all over the country.
I am, yes. Uh-huh.
Why Manchester? What's the affinity with Manchester?
Well, actually, I was originally invited over to be part of a celebrity golf tournament that was originally scheduled for the NSPCC for 20-some-odd years. And it was hosted by a fellow who's a famous actor or television star on the movie television show Dallas. And his name was Howard Keel.
Oh,
and
yes.
Just before Howard passed away, after I had been part of the charity for about 3 or 4 years, he asked me if I would continue to host it after his passing. And, of course, I had to accept an invitation like that. And so now I come over every year for the first week of September and host this charity event in Manchester.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. I get a great chance to visit all my friends over in England every year.
When I was asked to interview you, I didn't know even where to start with it. I mean, your career is just incredible. But I must start at the beginning. How did you end up in the Eagles? How did it all start?
Well, originally, a friend of mine, Bernie Ledden, and I had a high school band together in Gainesville, Florida. And Bernie, after several years, decided he was going to move back to California. He was originally from San Diego and play music out there, not in Florida, where we were together. And he joined different bands like the Hearts and Flowers and the Flying Burrito Brothers. And every time he would be in a band and come through Florida or come through New York or Boston, where I was living, he'd call me up and say, "You have to come down and hear my new band. They're really great." So I'd go see my old friend, and we'd hang out and play some music and have a drink and kind of catch up on our lives. And he kept saying, "You need to move to California. This is not happening on the East Coast. The music scene in the early 70s was in California. You need to move out to L.A. And I was at the time married and very reluctant to pack up everything I had and my wife and drive across country until he came through right after the Eagles' first album. I think it was early 71. 72, and I went down to see him. They were actually opening on a Yes tour, which is a really odd combination of these cowboys coming out and playing these country songs, and then Yes coming out. It was a real odd booking. But anyway, I went down to see Bernie and hung out backstage with him. And we played and jammed backstage like we had done since high school. And I met Glenn Frey and Don Henley there. And they were very impressed with my playing. And they also encouraged me to move out to California. So I finally decided I need to pack up what I've got. And I sold everything I had, put it in a little trailer, and hooked it to the back of this rusted Volvo and drove across country. And when I got there, literally, Bernie was leaving, I think, 2 days later after I arrived to go out on the road with the Eagles to promote Desperado. And I was based in L.A., and had started working at a band called Crosby Nash, playing Stephen Stills's parts. And ironically enough, Stephen and I, when we were 14 back in Gainesville, had been in a band together. And it was just ironic that later I'd wind up being him and playing his parts in this other band. And they were all managed by the same company: Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the Eagles, Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne. All those California bands were managed by a company called Geffen Roberts. It was David Geffen, which everybody knows, and another fellow named Elliot Roberts owned this management company. So when the Eagles were in town and I was in town, I'd go down and jam with them or rehearse with them and see my friends and just hang out. And I got a call one day that they were in the studio working on their third album, On the Border, and that they really wanted some electric rock and roll guitar. So they called me to come in and play this song called Good Day in Hell that I played slide guitar on, which actually turned out, ironically enough, to be a very long Good Day in Hell. And it was just a 3 or 4 hour session that we played and recorded this record. And the next day I got a call from Glenn asking me to join the band. They had liked what I had done, and I said, absolutely, and went back in the studio the next day and started working on more tracks on the record, like Already Gone and the other songs that I wound up playing on for that record. So from then on, I was in the band. Was that a long enough answer?
And you didn't even read that. That was great. That was off the top of the head. That was superb. And at what point, though, when you started in the Eagles, did you suddenly realize, hang on, we're onto something here? It's going to be so successful.
Well, their band was a very unique band in that it had five when I joined the band. Guys that could actually sing, five guys that wrote, and five guys that could actually play an instrument. Most bands, you have guys that either just sing, or they just write, or they just play an instrument. But this band was unique in that it had kind of five front men, five eight dogs, you know, as far as everybody being able to, any one of us kind of carry a band. And there was so much talent and ability there that it was a large palette to select from, everybody's diverse interests. Like Bernie was a really strongly influenced country guitarist and instrumentalist. And on the other end of the spectrum, I was obviously rock and roll influenced from day one. And yet there, everybody in between, Don and Glenn, Glenn was actually really R&B out of Detroit. So there was a huge kind of smorgasbord of material and styles and influences to choose from, and the combination of those really was exciting in the fact that some of the products that we made, the records we made, were unique combinations of all of those influences that nobody else had been able to do in any of our other prior bands. So it was a lot of excitement, creativity, creatively there in that band to be able to make new, fresh, exciting records.
Was there a lot of pressure after Hotel California to sort of keep up with that sort of, because the success of Hotel California was immense?
Well, Hotel California was by far the largest record the Eagles ever made. As far as its recognition worldwide, when we would go play, whether it was Germany or Japan or some country that didn't even speak English, when you walked out on stage and started the opening chords of that song, everybody knows that song and would just explode with recognition and appreciation, which is really the beauty of being able to do all of that work, was being able to walk out in front of thousands of people and play those songs for those people. That they really love those songs. And at that point, we realized that we had created a monster And unfortunately, this monster sort of turned on us and ate us, if you know what I mean. It really raised such a high level of quality to surpass that album. It just put immense pressure on us all, writing and recording and performing, to be able to surpass what we had already done. And it was very difficult to go back in the studio and come up with another album that big. It's like a huge box office success. And usually the trailers and the next one, the sequels, are never as good as the first one. It was really difficult to do that. And it put a lot of stress on us to do that. It was difficult.
And now you have this book, Heaven and Hell. Now, for those of you who don't know, but in 2001, you were fired from the band.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we got back together, well, when we first started off in the 70s, we were just a bunch of kids in ripped jeans and T-shirts, long hair, driving around in rental cars. Everything was equally shared. It was all for one, one for all. We all worked shoulder to shoulder on the road, in the studio, writing songs, doing everything we could to make those records and the best band we could possibly be. And we shared everything equally. Everybody owned the equal share of the company, the record royalties. Everything was shared. But when we resumed in 1994, Don Henley and Glenn Frey seemed to feel that they were more entitled to the lion's share of the profits of merchandising, of ticket sales, of records, of everything, that they were just kind of claiming the whole organization for themselves. Now, at that point, there were really only three owners of the Eagles Limited, which is a corporation, which was Don Henley, Glenn Frey, and myself. The original five owners included Bernie Ledden and Randy Meisner, but they had already left the band earlier, once after one of these nights, and then Randy left after Hotel California. And when they did, they surrendered their stock back to the company. This company owns the name the Eagles and the products that it makes, T-shirts, hats, records, sales of tickets, every dollar that comes in, that company owned it. So in 94, although Don and Glenn felt much more entitled, we still had this corporate issue that I was a one-third owner of this company. And in order for us to continue to go forward, they were making demands that they wanted a greater share of all the profits. So I conceded and said, okay, we'll try this for a while, and if it goes well, then we'll take another revisit to the agreement and make an adjustment, just to see if we could work together, stay in the same room, which was the big concern. But as time went by through the 90s, even with the success of Hell Freezes Over and the magnitude of the money, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars were coming through the door. There was never enough to really satisfy kind of that endless greed that they seemed to exhibit. So unfortunately, greed, power, and control started becoming key issues amongst the band. Now, Joe Walsh and Timothy Schmidt don't own anything. They're employees. So it really left Don Henley, Glenn Frey, and myself struggling for equality and control in this organization. And every contract, it seemed like they were negotiating, they wanted a greater profit for themselves, another layer of profit, either on a record or this, or more control. Instead of sitting down in a room and having a band meeting to decide about tour ideas and where we were going, that never happened. They went somewhere and made all these decisions and would tell us what we were doing. There are laws in the United States concerning what they call abuse of a minority shareholder. And it means that, say, in this example, two members get together and say, well, we're going to manipulate this company and make all these profits for ourselves to the detriment of the other one shareholder, even though you're equal shareholders. The law says that you cannot operate a company to the detriment of a minority shareholder. You have to operate and make decisions in a company for the equal profit for everyone that owns stock in that company. And so at one point I started saying, you know, I think you guys are overreaching. You're being greedy, not only for yourselves, but for me and for Joe Walsh and Timothy Schmidt. Although they had no legal argument, I was pretty much towing my side of the tug of war here for three members against the other two members in the band, Don and Glenn. But it wasn't directly done. It was done through lawyers and attorneys and managers and business managers and this swarm of people that had gathered around this table with all this money on it, which is really, you know, the sad part is that it went from being friends playing music to lawyers arguing about how the money was going to be cut up. And the music became very far down on the list of priorities. So finally it got to a point where I believe that they felt that it was easier for them to fire me from the band and seize control of the whole thing for themselves, not have to negotiate with me. And not only would they make more money by not having to pay me, but they would have complete unfettered control. And so I got a phone call one night, much to my surprise, saying that they had decided they were going to go on without me. And it wasn't anything I had done or said or an argument. As a matter of fact, we hadn't even spoke directly for months prior to that, much less a phone call to say, hey, what's the problem? Let's talk about this and kind of work some out. There was none of that. It was just they had had their henchman deliver the fatal blow.
What was your aim with the book, though? Is it just to tell your story, or are you trying to have a little bit of a dig back at your...
No. There's no dig back at it. Really, it started out as a very cathartic, self-therapeutic process. After I was terminated from the band, I had lost a large group of friends that I'd been part of my life for 27 years. And my life was going through a real major change. And I started sitting down and meditating pretty much every day for an hour or so. And when I'd come out of these meditations, I would jot down the thoughts and memories that I had had. And after a month or so, I had compiled literally pages and pages of these things. I wasn't quite certain why I was doing it, but it was very helpful. It made me feel really good. And my girlfriend started reading them and saying, you know, this would be a really interesting book. You should publish this book. So the next thing I knew, I had a literary agent and then a book deal with Orion and another publisher in the States. And I said, well, if it's going to be a book, I should really kind of work on this. So I started spending a couple hours a day sitting at a computer, taking parts of my life and flushing them out into, full life statements where people could actually read it and see not only what I was about, but kind of a real valid look behind the curtain into the Eagles, what the people were like, what the lifestyle was like, how the music was written and made, what the wild and crazy parties were all about, the fun times, the bad times, the heaven and the hell.
Ah, so that's where the title has come from, the heaven and the hell.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, and one final thing. How are you managing to look so young?
Well, I have a very beautiful, very young, well, I can't tell you how young, fiance. And, instead of a treadmill, I just chase her all day long. And it keeps me fit.
Don, well, I wish you the best of luck with this book. I can't wait to read it. It's going to be a fascinating insight into your life. And I'm sure everybody out there will just be grabbing it off the shelves. So I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
And it was great to see you. Thank you for coming along.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Don Felder's book, Heaven and Hell, My Life with the Eagles, is available now for only £6.59 from borders.co.uk. The debate is raging on what toys and games are going to be number one this Christmas. We asked Borders Toys and Games buyer Jay Green for her insight into the fun but competitive area. And I, for one, was surprised at what's leading the way. Now, there's less than 2 months to go until the big day. We are, of course, talking Christmas. And that means it's going to be a busy time on the run-up in Borders stores. So what better time than to catch up with toys and game buyer Jay Green. Now, tell us, what are the big toys and games we've got to look forward to in Christmas? The store is looking great already, but something that you've got your eye on.
The big story this year, without a doubt, is the Rubik's Cube. Yeah, I know, 30 years old and still going strong. There have been absolutely no technological advances made to the Rubik's Cube since its original development 30 years ago, and yet it's going to be the hottest toy of the year. It basically just taps into the whole sort of nostalgia, retro trend that's going on in the marketplace at the moment. We've seen a lot of, over the last few years in games especially, we've seen a lot of developments in technology and toys and things like that. But I think people this year are really going back to the old school days, really.
I have to admit, I had one. I never managed to solve it my own. I went out and bought a book to solve it. Did you have one?
Absolutely. And I still haven't figured out how to do the Rubik's Cube. I can do about two-thirds of it, and there's that last final third which completely does my head in. I will master it one day, probably 30 years from now.
So the Rubik's Cube, now that is a big surprise for me. Is there anything in there that most of us would expect to see this Christmas?
Other surprises, I think, for me at Borders anyway, we've been really excited by Mr. Men. We think Mr. Men is going to be absolutely huge this Christmas. There are a great range of toys coming out. The best toy, I think, for me has been the Tickle Me Mr. Tickle, which I think is going to be absolutely brilliant. But no, again...
Tell us, what is that, Tickle Me Mr. Tickle?
I don't know if you know the Tickle Me Elmo toy that came out a few years ago. It's basically you push its belly and it just starts giggling and laughing. And it's absolutely hysterical. You watch it and you just have to laugh. And they basically use that same technology but in Mr. Tickle. And it's just going to be absolutely brilliant. I think Mr. Men is very current. It's very on trend. It appeals to everyone from parents to grandparents to students to little kids. And we've always done very well with Mr. Men. And I'm just really excited by the amount of toys and add-on products that are available right now.
So do you think that'll be the battle for number one, then, the Rubik's Cube and Mr. Men?
It's definitely going to be Rubik's Cube. I think Mr. Men, one of the problems with Mr. Men has been that it's come very late into the market. It's not really hitting the market until November, which means that, from a Borders point of view, is that the mass market won't have it. So hopefully Argos won't have it, Woolworths won't have it, Toys R Us might not have it, which means that Borders almost is going to try and take ownership of Mr. Men this Christmas.
And I would imagine you've got lots of offers in store as well. And tell me also about Radcliffe the Bear.
Radcliffe the Bear. For the past few years, we've always done a bear at Christmas, which is related to spend £20 or £25 and get the bear for £5. This year, I'm actually really excited by Radcliffe the Bear because he's the first bear that I've actually chosen. We had a big committee and everyone got their say-so as to whether we went with Radcliffe or not. We had a vote in stores about naming the bear Radcliffe. I just feel it's really exciting. He's a great-looking bear, totally value for money, and it's something that we at Borders are really proud of.
And any other offers in store?
Other key products that will do really well this Christmas will be things like the pocket stylophones. Again, they've been around for
I had one
years.
Of the old ones.
The original ones. Again, it's that whole retro nostalgia thing. You know, what was out years ago comes back every generation. And again, that's going to be another key trend this Christmas for Borders.
And in your Christmas stocking, if you could choose a toy from Borders, what would you have?
The You Can Do the Cube book, which is exclusive to Borders and a must for everyone. But yeah, I think that's going to be the product, actually. Don't just give the Rubik's Cube, give the You Can Do the Cube book too.
Brilliant. Jay, great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Now, before we catch up with the comical Harry Hill, let me tell you about some of the fantastic competitions available to enter at borders.co.uk. First off, we want to know what movies matter to you. Log on to borders.co.uk/competitions, tell us your top three movies and why, and we'll then give 10 lucky winners a free pair of tickets to see the new James Bond movie, Quantum of Solace, at Cineworld. And continuing the 007 theme, you can still get your entries in for our Young Bond competition, which celebrates the launch of By Royal Command, offering one lucky winner the chance to win a helicopter ride down the River Thames. And we also have a wonderful poetry competition running to celebrate the release of the quirky but fabulous Mistakes in the Background by Laura Dockrell. Now, we have a real treat for Harry Hill fans. He is, of course, on our screens at the moment with his TV burp. And as well as that, Britain's favourite comedian has put together a side-splitting joke book for all the family. Harry Hill's Whopping Great Joke Book. He turned up at Borders Charing Cross Road and quickly had the team in stitches.
Hello, I'm Harry Hill, and you're listening to the Borders podcast. I'm joined today by Alan, who's going to ask me a series of questions about the books that I've got coming out for the lucrative Christmas market.
Lucrative?
Well, obviously, that's my primary motivation in this time of credit crunch.
Is the money side of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I have to ask you, what made you start writing books?
Well, I think it's one of those things when you start getting a bit of a name for yourself in showbiz circles, which, of course, I have developed over the years, you get offered other to do other things.
Mm.
So, and one of which is, would you like to write a book? So I wrote a novel. No, the first one I did was a fun book, which was tied in with my Channel 4 series.
Right.
Which was sunk, rather, by the fact that the book came out after Christmas. But never mind. So I did that. And then I wrote, and then they said, would you like to write a novel? And then there was a long gap. I had the idea, and I faxed it to my agent.
Right.
Who ignored it. And I then phoned him 3 months later and said, did you get that fax? And he said, yeah, what do you want me to do with it?
Oh.
I said, well, you know, it's an idea for a book, kid's book. Oh, right, yeah, okay, well, I'll see if anyone's interested. So
that's where it came from.
Yeah, yeah.
And where did you
It was when I was on tour, you see. Is that your question?
Well,
when do you find the time?
Well, I was about to say, where did you find the time? Where did you get the inspiration for a tiny, tiny horse?
Well, I was on tour, and so you get a lot of downtime, you know, hanging around in hotel foyers and on buses on a tour. So I just, it was a doodle idea that I had, because it's sort of led by the illustration, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Which, of course, you do all yourself.
Yeah. And then I looked up on the internet, and there is this whole world of tiny horses that actually exist. Little tiny, not Shetland ponies, they're actually horses that are dwarves.
But how big are they?
They're about 2 foot.
But not 50p size?
No.
So you just
took... That would be ridiculous.
And anybody who would write a book about that would just be mad.
They would run the risk of being trampled. Once I, you know, had the idea and then looked up the fact that there were these tiny horses, it helped.
It started off from there.
Yeah, and one was called Tim, funnily enough.
Oh, anyway, yeah. Fair enough. Well, listen, I'm going to start by saying welcome. Thank you for coming to Borders for your books. Thank you for that
at
introduction
last.
As well. I know we got there with the introduction in the end. I know, just about 5 minutes in, but thank you very much for coming along today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I was quite excited, actually, to know that you had these books out, because I hadn't heard of Tim the Tiny Horse until I heard
Tim
you
the Tiny Hearse,
Hearse which is book 3 in the series.
About a tiny car that transports dead ants to and from crematoriums.
Somehow that could come out in this book. I can see it happening.
So you missed out on Tim 1.
I missed out on
saying?
Tim 1. But
I'm surprised. Yeah.
But who's it aimed at? Because is it a children's book, or is it based going across both types of age groups?
Well, it's aimed at children, but I didn't really I wrote it just, you know, I didn't check it out with any children, as although I have 3 children myself. I think, you know, you can't keep going, what do you think of this joke, what do you think, you know, they get fed up with it, and also it's very difficult to get an honest answer when it's your dad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just wrote it, and I thought it would be something that I would like as a kid, but I think when you're reading stories to children, as I do my own ones, you know, like I get fed up reading, you know, at one time they like Noddy. And, oh, dear, you know, if you're the adult reading the kids love it, but there's nothing in it for you, is there? You know, big ears living in a toad. So I thought, write this and see if we can get a few jokes for the grown-ups as well.
Right.
Because so I noticed... So in this book, right, he, Tim the Tiny Horse, gets a buy-to-let flat.
Right.
Now, not every child would necessarily, you know, have done that, but they probably got the idea of it, and the parent will get the joke in that as well.
So, and that's what I mean. So it could be aimed at both adults and children as well.
And I think the other thing is, if you sort of aim it at children, or you know, you get children, it's very easy to underestimate what children know about and like. You know, children, their sense of humour is actually quite sophisticated, I think. You know, it's more sophisticated than you might think. And I was, you know, my kids have never watched Big Brother, for instance, but in Tim the Tiny Horse Book 1, he was watching Big Brother on TV. Now, they never watched Big Brother, but they got the joke because, you know, kids are aware of this stuff because it's in the air, isn't it? It's in the papers, you know, adverts for it on TV, older children talking to them about
it. It's almost like treating them a little bit more like adults in the book, because although it's a children's story, you're putting in all these little bits and pieces, and they're going to go, actually, do you know what? I get that. Yeah. I get that joke.
I hope so, but not for adults, but not in a sort of Jacqueline Wilson type of way. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, a broken home and a hairdresser on crack.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. So the first book did very well, and then you thought, let's do a second book.
You've got it in a nutshell.
Right, that really is it, is it? It was just it.
No, but, I mean, I thought, Yeah, it was always the. I thought he's a little character that's got a bit more in him, and
a bit more potential.
This is not going to be the last Tim the Tiny Horse book.
So the adventures continue.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, yeah. So that's one of your books.
Yeah,
and in your
so I've written the stories and I've done the little drawings as well. So you know that's another aspect of it. So I've always done the little drawings and doodles for myself.
Yes, because I've only seen the first little doodle on there because I've not seen the book yet. So I don't know what sort of doodles you've done throughout the rest of the book.
Here's one there.
Go on, show me the book. Yeah.
Have a look in there.
And have the drawings taken as long as it has to write the book?
Well, it's about the same time.
Do you do them at the same time?
Yeah. Alan's flicking through the book.
This is sound effects flicking through the book. They are doodles, aren't they? I like that. That they are literally doodles.
Well, the drawings really, but never mind. Doodles.
You said the word, right, I'm off. I mean. So that's one of the books you've got coming out towards Christmas. And the other one you've got is a joke book.
Yes.
Now, I would have thought you'd have brought a joke book out a lot earlier than this. I'd have thought that would have been one of your first books. Why only now has the joke book appeared?
What it came out of was because I've had this association with Faber. So they said, you know, we were sort of talking about what I would do next. And they said, you know, at Faber, they haven't got a joke book.
And when people read the jokes in this particular joke book, are they going to, when you read them, can you hear Harry Hill saying them? Is that how they've been written?
I don't know. Let's find out. I'll read one, see if you can hear me.
Go on then.
I caught Alan standing in front of the mirror with his eyes closed. He said he was trying to see what he looked like when he was asleep. When it says Alan, it doesn't mean you, Alan, right? I don't want you to think that I'm suggesting that you are a bit of an idiot.
Thanks, Harry.
Sorry, but what?
I hope the book does really well. I hope it really sells.
So a lot of the jokes are between... It's ironic, really. But look, Alan.
It really was Alan as well.
A lot of them are... Because I had this conceit where my son's name was Alan.
Right.
In the old Channel 4 show. So where there's a lot of them are kind of cross-talk, you know, where you're talking, it's like a double act thing. Hey, your dog's just eaten my hat. And then Alan says, don't worry, he likes hats. Then Harry says, I don't like your attitude. It's not my attitude, it's your attitude.
So yes is the answer to the critical question, which is when you read them, you can hear yourself saying them.
Yeah. Well, I would hope now, from now on, that when they heard it, they would hear my voice for the Harry bits and your voice, Alan, for the...
Oh, great. So everybody's going to think I'm stupid throughout the whole of the book. That's great.
Well, sometimes he gets the upper hand. Sometimes
please find an upper hand one very quickly.
Mummy, why are you angry? I've spent the whole day sitting here reading. Mum, yes, but the rest of us would like to use the toilet too.
And that's supposed to make me feel better? I mean... This is just Digger Allen Day.
Yeah, sorry, it's turning into that, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
I'm so embarrassed. They told me it would be Ian interviewing me.
Yes. Because one of the things I noticed is obviously when you see yourselves in things like... TV's...
Stop. They're never going to be able to use any of this.
No, we'll be fine, we'll be fine. I can edit really well. It's just been me going, hello. In your ITV's TV Burp, congratulations, obviously, in the awards you won and all that.
It was a rather thrown away.
Well, no, because we're talking about the books. You know, we don't come back on that. Congratulations on the awards that you won. It's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks, Adam.
You know, your speeches were great, and I really admired you for that.
Cheers. And
thanks, great.
Yeah.
But one of the things I noticed when you watch your things like ITV's TV Burp and things like that is there is a specific style that you're very, you know, famous for in the way that you speak, in the way that you talk and tell your jokes. And is that what's necessary when reading these jokes from the book?
Well, I think... I'm hoping that these jokes will, are good enough jokes that they won't require any particular skill in telling. Yeah. Because I think a lot of my stuff, if you wrote it down and read it, it wouldn't be funny, actually, a lot of it. You know, part of being a comedian, I suppose, is it's the way I tell them. It's the way you sell a joke, isn't it?
Would you consider yourself an observational comedian?
No, absolutely not, and how dare you. No, not really. I wish I could do that, but I can't. The great thing about being an observational comedian, you can, you know, choose a subject like, I don't know, the difference between cats and dogs, and you've got, you know, 10-15 minutes, and, you know, if you get booked in a club, you've only got to do 20 minutes, and I've got a lot of one-liners, haven't I, you know, just bang, gone. So you've got to have a lot of one-liners to fill 20 minutes.
So where do you get your inspiration from?
I knew he was going to ask me that question.
Page 34?
Observations... No, I don't. I'll tell you what it is. As simple as, you know, it's that old thing of, you know, 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. So a lot of it is me sitting down, looking at a blank piece of paper, thinking, try and think of a joke.
But then, but a lot of what you do is very physical on stage and things like that, and that, and that's half of the humour about you, I suppose, that the audience comes to. Where's that come from? Because obviously you've got this look, the big collar, you know, the shoes, everything. Mm. Where's all that come from?
Well, it's that old thing of if it works, keep it in, and it just, you know, I started off. It's you're kind of like a monkey. You know those monkeys that they've got like an electrode in that you, if they do something right, they get a positive. Buzz. Well, if you got a monkey and dressed him up in a big collar, and then every time he did something that you thought was funny, he gave him a electric shock in the pleasure part of his brain, within 3 months, you'd have a really funny monkey. I'm not suggesting you go out and do that. You haven't got the facilities here. I can see that for a start.
And where are we going to see you next over the next coming months? And besides the books and everything, are we going to see you back on TV?
Well, if you live near me, you'll see me through the front window of my house, where I will be a lot of the time. And then usually I will walk out of the house in the morning to the spa. So those are two key places where you'll see me. But I've got TV burp. I've got TV burp coming up. It's coming back. TV burp.
Right.
It's coming back in October and taking us right up to Christmas. And then over the other side of Christmas through to April. So if you're not sick of me yet, you will be by April Fool's Day.
Okay. And any
then Spain. Then I will be in Spain for 2 weeks. You might see me there.
Well, brilliant. Well, Harry, thank you very much for coming in about the books. I hope it was everything you expected.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Alan.
No, you're more than welcome, and thanks for writing.
Should we do one more joke, Alan?
Go on,
then.
Should we
do an Alan joke? It's a shame you haven't got a copy of it as well.
What, you want me to read off my bits?
You could do your bit.
Go on.
Oh, well, it's a long one. Okay, so you answer this question, Alan.
Go on.
You probably know this one. Will you remember me in 50 years?
Yes.
Will you remember me in 20 years?
Yes.
Will you remember me in 10 years?
Yes.
Will you remember me in 5 years?
Yes.
Will you remember me next year?
Of course.
Will you remember me next month?
Yes.
Skipping ahead. Will you remember me in another second?
Why not?
Knock, knock.
Who's there? Oh, yeah, okay. I just do voiceover stuff, okay? Fine.
He fell for it.
Yeah, thanks. Is it one L or two L's?
Yes. I think it... How many does yours have?
Whatever's the opposite of that one.
It's one.
Oh, yeah. Good. It's not me then. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
Harry, wish you the best of luck with the book. So we hope to see you again with the next Tiny Horse if another one comes out.
I'm happy to come back.
It'll be a pleasure. Thank you very much.
It might be you again.
It might be me again. Good luck with the books and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
Harry Hill's books, Tim the Tiny Horse and Harry Hill's whopping great joke book are both available from Borders.co.uk and from Borders stores. And if you fancy winning tickets to see TV Burp being filmed and meet Harry Hill, just get onto the Borders website now and answer the simple question for your chance to win. It's time to go back behind the scenes again with the Borders buying team. Well, we've already had a chance to speak to the toys and game buyer, Jay, about what's big for Christmas. Now, another big area at Borders is, of course, children's books. And it's a pleasure to welcome for the very first time to the Borders studio, John Packard, who is the senior children's buyer. John, good to see you.
Hello. So we've got a couple of big books yet to come this year. One is the new Anthony Horowitz, so his fans will be eagerly anticipating that one. It's Necropolis, which is in his Power of Five series. And so we imagine that that will be a very big one for the boys, group 8 to 12. Another book, a young adult book, Double Cross by Mallory Blackman, which it was within her Knots and Crosses series. And again, it's been a number of years since the last one, so fans will be very eager to see how that develops in the new book. And I guess those are the two biggest kind of hardbacks remaining for the rest of the year, and obviously possibly the biggest children's book, if not the biggest book of the year, is going to be Beedle the Bard by J.K. Rowling, which is briefly mentioned in the last Harry Potter book, The Deathly Hallows. And there's been a lot of news about, you know, how the original copies are so, you know, it going for 1.5 million, I think, was one of the figures bounded around. And so we anticipate, you know, lots of customers will want to come in. We're doing midnight openings, so lots of customers will want to come in and buy a copy of Beedle the Bard, perfect stocking filler.
Now, I see on the table in front of us an array of different books. Now, the first one when you walked in with your arms laden full was the Paddington book. It's Michael Bond, and it looks beautiful. It's really a very nice... I would quite like to have that little set myself, actually. But there are two books in there. Tell us which ones they are, and also, I understand this is exclusive to Borders.
Yes, it's only going to be available in Borders stores, and it is including a hardback version of the very first Paddington book, A Bear Called Paddington, and the very latest one, which was published this year, Here and Now, for the 50th anniversary. So it's a special edition slipcase, which is a very nice, perfect, classic children's gift.
Mm, it's lovely, actually. It's very nice. I do like that one. And then the other one is a bigger book, isn't it? And what bright colours on this one? What's it called?
It's Harry and the Dinosaurs, Bucketful of Stories. It's 5 stories in 1 Treasury paperback at $9.99. And again, that's only just in Borders. I'm a huge fan of Harry and the Dinosaurs, so I like this one particularly myself. So that's another great thing you can pick up.
And there's a book that I think I've seen before, Stick Man, and this one is beautifully illustrated, isn't it?
This is one that I'd recommend probably to everybody, you know, who has a child of that age, you know, 3 to 5. Julia Donaldson and Axel Scheffler, you know, of Gruffalo fame. And in my opinion, it's quite controversial, but, you know, I think this is their even better than the Gruffalo. I'll just read the back. Stickman lives in a family tree with his stick lady love and his stick children 3. It's fantastic. It's a real harebrained tale. It's a bit of a retelling of the Gingerbread Man story, I guess, but with a kind of happier ending, fortunately, and a nice kind of seasonal ending as well, so it makes a perfect Christmas purchase. But Julie Donaldson is superb, and Axel Scheffler's illustrations are just fantastic. So, again, a great gift idea.
Well, I do like the Gingerbread Man, so I might pick that one up. Now, before I came in to have a chat with you, I actually did wander downstairs in the Borders Charing Cross Road branch, and I saw this one that you have next, which is called Olivia. That caught my eye from afar, actually, because it's bright red, and it's got that lovely picture. Describe that picture and also the book for us.
Well, it's Olivia's a little girl, toddler pig, I guess. She's very unruly and very confident, and you know, as toddlers are, you know, she's got no issues with her confidence. It's a bit more of a kind of left field purchase, I guess. Olivia's got a real cult following, including David Hockney and other artists like that. It's illustrated and written by Ian Faulkner. The great thing to say about this book is watch this space, because there's going to be a series on television next year based on Olivia. So we're all quite excited about that. So hopefully we'll take her to the next level and bring her to a whole new audience. But this is a particularly nice Christmas hardback, and it's a typical Olivia tale of, you know, of her skiing and playing the piano and just generally causing havoc on Christmas Eve and not wanting to go to bed.
It looks very, very good quality.
It is. It's, you know, it's again, it's a very, very Borders book, I guess.
Okay, and then we've got one final one that you brought in for us. What's this one?
This is by Oliver Jeffers. It's The Great Paper Caper, and it is his latest hardback picture book. You might know him from How to Catch a Star and Lost and Found. This is a kind of CSI children's picture book. You know, it's all about a reindeer and a beaver trying to solve where all the wood in the forest is going to. And it turns out that it's this bear has been snaffling all the wood to make paper airplanes. I mean, there's a brilliant Usual Suspects spread in it with a polar bear and a koala bear and the American brown bear all in a lineup. It's just fantastic. And not much text in this book. The illustrations tend to be very, very... beautifully thought out. The jokes tend to be very visual. The big thing to say about Oliver Jeffers is that on Christmas Eve, hopefully, if it's finished in time, he'll have an animation of Lost and Found on television, which takes up from the old Raymond Briggs Snowman slot, you know. So
right, yeah.
Big things coming from Oliver Jeffers. Also, our in-store look for Christmas has been designed by Oliver Jeffers as well, so we're very behind this illustrator.
Yes, it's very, very different, I would say, that one. Finally, then, there are a couple of movies coming out that are based on books, and I know you want to tell us about them. Let's listen to the first one, then.
Well, the first one's based on the young adult book by Stephanie Meyer, Twilight, which has been taking everybody by storm. The sales of Breaking Dawn, I think it's fair to say, exceeded everybody's expectations. There were people queuing up as soon as stores opened early just for the release of that book. And the film, which is coming in December, which I've seen a few clips of, looks just as brilliant. It's a teen vampire high school romp. It's absolutely addictive reading. I didn't have a chance to read it in the past, so I'm just catching it myself, and I'm halfway through, and it's fantastic stuff. So that movie will hopefully take it to a whole new audience, and lots of people will want that book. Another film coming out, slightly younger age range, probably 8 to 12, we would call it, is Inkheart by Cornelia Funke, who is Germany's answer to J.K. Rowling. And that's got a rather star-studded cast of Helen Mirren and Brendan Fraser. And again, that should be a big film for Christmas. It's one of those books which deals with that wonderful idea of stories within stories and, you know, stories coming to life when you read them and all the kind of worlds colliding. So, again, that should be a very good film for Christmas.
And just as I did with Jay earlier, if there would be one children's book that John Packard could have in his Christmas stocking this year from Borders, what would it be?
It's a very, very difficult question. I would probably say if it was going to be a picture book, I'd probably want to have Stickman in my stocking. If it was going to be something a bit older, fiction-wise, it's, again, a little bit off the wall. It's Neil Gaiman's Graveyard book, which is absolutely fantastic. It's my favourite book of his to date. And it deals with a young boy who's orphaned, as often they are, and he's brought up within the graveyard, and he can see the ghosts of the past. And it's this wonderful, wonderful, quite dark story, but very, very entertaining, very readable. And I think it's absolutely superb, and adults tend to rave about Neil Gaiman's children's books just as much as children do, so it's a great crossover book.
Great, John. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for bringing all these books to life. That's John Packard, Senior Children's Buyer here at Borders. You can find loads of great offers at Borders, both online at borders.co.uk and in-store. There are discounts on the top hardbacks of the year, including The Wonderful Boy in the Dress for half price, 3 for 2 on children's books and the best paperbacks of 2008, as well as many great savings on all the best toys and games out this Christmas. And just before I go, remember to pre-order your copy of the brand new J.K. Rowling book, The Tales of Beedle the Bard. It's released on December 4th, and it's the first J.K. Rowling book to be published since Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Pre-order it now for £4.99 and get 2 free books and secure a much-valued early edition of the book, only in-store and at borders.co.uk. And don't forget our new Borders mobile. To get your free voucher for £5 off when you spend £30 in-store or online, just text the word Borders to 82100. Well, that brings us to the end of this Borders podcast. It's been a busy one, hasn't it? And I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to check back in 2 weeks at borders.co.uk for the next podcast, which will be packed full of more interviews and news from the world of books, music and DVD, as well as competitions and offers. I'm Susan Spence, and on behalf of all the team at Borders, thanks for listening.